Jeremy Stanton.
Pretty curioso.
It's a shame. I'm sure Sir Rabin would like to speak about the Haftorah this week, as usual. The Haftorah this week is the longest in the whole year. We've got more psukim in than Maftir Yonah has, which is known to be long. And so, Be'ez Hashem, I would like to divide the Haftorah into two. And Be'ez Hashem speak about B'Shalach this week, maybe Be'ez Hashem some other time, about the second half. The first half is the historical side and takes Perek Dalet in Shoftim, and the second part of the Haftorah is the Shiras Devorah, which most people are more familiar with, the song that Devorah sung after the victory. Mitzvah Hashem, today to concentrate on the historical side of what exactly happened at the time. To put you into the picture of Sefer Shoftim, the book of Shoftim, takes 400 years. It took over 400 years after the Bnei Yisrael had come into Eretz Yisrael under Yehoshua to be able to conquer the whole land. Only under David HaMelech was the whole of Eretz Yisrael conquered by Klal Yisrael. Only under David HaMelech. For 400 years since Yehoshua, under the time of Yehoshua, five Shevotim had taken land in Eretz Yisrael. Only five. The other seven, bit by bit, had to conquer and capture their territory from the Goyim who were still there. As we see in the Haftorah this week about Canaan, of the five to seven main nations in Eretz Yisrael, you find that the nation of Canaan was still there in quite strong force. They lived in the north. So the two Shevotim, two of the most northern Shevotim, were Zevulun and Naphtali, and their territory was overrun by Canaanim. Canaanim had their own castles, their own cities, and they very much had strength in those parts of Eretz Yisrael, in the north of Eretz Yisrael. The central part of Eretz Yisrael was under Jewish rule. We did not have kings, we had Shoftim. The Shofet at the time, the judge at any one particular time, was both the spiritual leader and the political leader at the same time. They did both, literally. A Shofet who was a Novi was the leader, and a Shofet who was a judge was the Talmud Chochom, and who was the person who was in charge of Congo, keeping Eretz Yisrael, keeping the Jewish people controlled. That is how life went on for 400 years. This is our land. If you want to know anything new, I can't tell you anything new, because if we look, Eretz Yisrael is our land. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us our land. But if we want to have the Zechus, to have our land for us, without anybody else causing us any problems, that's up to us. We've got to do the right thing. And we find that Sefer Shoftim is there to tell us about the things we did wrong. We can only read the words and see what the Mephoshim tell us how to understand the things that we did wrong. Don't take it by reading an English translation and saying, you see what terrible people, Chas v'Shalom, that's not how we cannot do such things. We have to learn with the Mephoshim and see. And regularly, the level at which Klal Yisrael is judged is incredibly higher than the level at which the non-Jewish nations are judged. Incredibly higher. Because we can have a situation where one person does something wrong, and Klal Yisrael are judged as a result. The first example, as he mentioned just now, is going to give, was Ochon, in the time of Yehoshua, when Yehoshua had been told, you're going to conquer the whole land. And we had one battle of Jericho, and Nace happened with Jericho, the walls collapsed, everything went wonderfully. And they were told, don't take any of the spoils of Jericho. One man in the whole of Klal Yisrael took from the spoils of Jericho. Only one man, Ochon, and this man hid it. And a few people must have known about it. It wasn't completely secret, but that's how it was. They had a second battle now, a few miles away, the town of Ai, and they lost the battle. 36 men got killed. Yehoshua was completely distraught, couldn't understand. We're told we're going to conquer the land, this is our land. and we've lost a battle already. Second battle, we've already lost a battle. What is happening to us? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, it's your fault. Klal Yisrael, Gonvu Yisrael, they have stolen, they have lied, they have hidden. And they, the Pasuk says, they have done these terrible things. Yeah, and you'd find out what's going on. One man had done something wrong. And that was the level at which Klal Yisrael was not allowed to be. And as a result, we, a nation, lost. So if you look at that as a general example of Klal Yisrael is being judged on a tremendously high level, each individual person has a responsibility towards the whole nation. Anyway, so as I told you to start with, that we have 400 years at which Eretz Yisrael was only semi-conquered, bit by bit. There were times that, you know, can you imagine, every single person here who's not a Kohen or a Levi would have been given a field. A field in Eretz Yisrael, it's your field. Whether you're actually able to live there and work your field depends on whether we've actually got control of the land. It's possible that your next door neighbour's got his field and he's got no problem whatsoever. And your field has got Canaanim over there, or Emorim, or Prism, whatever, who are still there in Eretz Yisrael, and they've taken it away from you and you won't be able to use it. You have two neighbours. One's got their own land, the other one hasn't. It's his, my property. Imagine my house. But somebody else is living in my house. I can't get in. I've got to go and find somewhere else to live. That was how Klal Yisrael lived for 400 years. There were times when we had battles and we threw the Goyim out as much as possible. And there were times when, unfortunately, we didn't. So this is a period relatively early, the time of Devorah. Devorah, we're told, took place at a time when Canaan was in the north. They had a melech, they had their own king. They were very, very strong. Yovin Melech Canaan was oppressing us. We'd had already two of the first shoftim of the first judges, Ehud and somebody called Shamgar. And these two had gone, and now the Goyim were in charge. In other words, they were, it was our land. We had most of it, but still the Canaanim in the north were giving tremendous trouble to us. Right, so we have a king, we have a general. The general was called Sisera. Sisera was a particularly nasty man. I believe, if I remember correctly, he was the ancestor of Rabbi Akiva. I believe Rabbi Akiva had yichus going back to this man, Sisera. Right? And Rabbi Akiva's father, Rabbi Akiva ben Yosef, Rabbi Akiva's father was a Ger Tzedek. And Rabbi Akiva, to tell us, that Rabbi Akiva could be descended. We saw that Haman's descendants became Tamid HaChachamim as well. There were some. It doesn't matter how bad you are, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can make Geirim come out of them. Which is why when Moshe Rabbeinu was told about Hitler killing the Mitzri, by even Kovacho, by Yakein Ish, and Kovacho, Chazal says, two generations. He had Ruach HaKodesh to see that none of his children, none of his grandchildren would ever become Geirim. And only when he was told that could not happen, that Moshe Rabbeinu was given the ability to be able to kill the man. Right? It's amazing how good people come out of bad people. I believe the only exception being Nebuchadnezzar. I don't think anybody good came out of Nebuchadnezzar. The Bosque says something about that. I can't remember the actual quotation, but Nebuchadnezzar had nobody good descended from him, but lots of other bad people did have. And that may have given them a zechus. You never know. So, we have Sisera, and we're told that he had 900 iron chariots. It is pointed out in this week's Sidra, Paro had only 600 chariots. And Paro's entire Egyptian army strength was 600 chariots. And Sisera, about how long later, 100 or so years later, Sisera had 900 chariots. And it gave tremendous, they had 20 years of which the Canaanim were giving us tremendous trouble in our own land. Okay? So please, we see what's going on nowadays. It's nothing new. If we have the Zechus HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give us our land, Eretz Yisrael, totally for us, without anybody being able to stop us. It's up to us completely. So, the leader was somebody called Devorah, Devorah Shonaviah. It's very rare that you could have a lady who was the leader of Klal Yisrael, and at the same time, she was an Aviah, she judged. Number four, should go and ask, how could you say that a lady could be a judge? We've got basic dinim and Shulchan Aruch regarding a lady being a dayan. She can't be a dayan. She can't sit on a beis din. She can't even give edus. So they go into the discussion of what exactly was being done. So one pirush says that because she was a neviah, she was specially given permission to judge. Or it means that she merely taught the Dayanim. Her knowledge of Torah was so great that they came and asked her shailas and she gave them the answers. But when it came to the actual beis din, she couldn't sit on the beis din. The Dayanim sat on the bat din. Right. So, let's try and tell you, where are we starting from? There's a place mentioned in the Pasuk called Charoshes HaGoyim, just before the Haftarah starts, tells you that Sisera lived in the Charoshes HaGoyim. What is this? What does it mean? The Targum translates it, Ibskof Karakam Amayo, a powerful city of the nations. It's literally a fortress. You know how many fortresses there were in the Middle East? There were tremendous fortresses, there were duxes, there were fortresses, there were forests. And they cleared the forest and built fortresses in the forests. Right, Rashi says that they had that this Sisera had a powerful, a dominant position to be able to control all the land around. And Rav Mendel Hirsch, who gives pirush on this, says that the Charoshes connects up to the word Cheresh, which means silent. And you think of a gun which has a silencer. The gun does all the damage that a gun can cause, but a silencer means it's nice and quiet, you can't hear it. Right? You don't have the noise. So in other words, they had the ability to do as much damage as they want quietly. Normally you hear the noise coming along and you get scared. Here, you didn't even hear the noise. They could do the damage what they wanted to do. Anyway, another pshat that the Mefarshim say is that it was a city that had craftsmanship from all different nations came around as a metropolis of craftsmanship. That's Nechoshes HaGoyim. So let's get on to Devorah. Who was she married to? The Pasuk says Eshes Lapidos. So we have the central person in the central man in the Haftarah is Borok. Borok ben Avinoam. Some of the Mefarshim say that Lapidos was another name for Borok. Devorah's husband was not known to be a Talmid Chacham. Lapidos is to do with fire. It's to do with what? It's a different portion. What it means is lapidos. Some say that she prepared wicks for the menorah, for the Mishkan, and she gave it to her husband that he should bring it to the Mishkan, and that gave him the zechus. Gave his zechus to Vizocha to Olam Abba, because he would deliver the wicks purely on that alone. That she delivered the wicks to the Mishkan for the menorah every single day, and that way they had via to light, and that in his zechus. That's lapidos, is to do with fire, is to do with light. So, that was her husband. Some say that Borok, the general, was lapidos, and she had separated from him as soon as she qualified to be a neviah. She felt she could not live a normal life with her husband. Don't ask me why, I don't know them, for she would say so, and she couldn't live a normal life with him, so therefore she told him to separate. She called him when she needed him, but otherwise she was busy receiving prophecies from Hashem and passing on what needed to be passed on. Unlike a lot of Nevi'im who give prophecies for the future, go through Yeshaya and you see how many things there are talking for the future. She gave no prophecies for the future. Everything that she said was purely a message from Hashem that you need to know now for the people of that present time. There were no long-term, what's going to happen to Klal Yisrael in 100 years' time. That wasn't her job. Her job was merely to talk to the people and encourage the people for the time being. Right. So, another pshat. Avos Yonason brings a pshat about this Eshes Lapidos. It says she was a fiery torch. She is literally burning with a desire for justice of Klal Yisrael. And that, her tremendous power inside her, was very unfeminine. You don't expect that from a woman. So the very fact that she was given masculine power, so to speak, in her, the way that she could feel and the way that she could speak, gave her the ability to judge the Dinei Torah that otherwise... There's a degree of objectivity that a man has that a lady doesn't have. Ladies are too kind. She was an exception. She wasn't. She had to say she was more masculine in her personality, and that gave her the ability to be able to see things in a more objective way. It says she would sit tachas tomer devora. If you split the words up, and she was svahi yosheves posuk hei, and she was sitting tachas tomer devora. Some say she was sitting under the palm of devora. The sefer tomer devora mushakor devero, the palm of devora. So on one hand they say this was her palm tree. If you look at the neginas on it, the tzomim on it, you see tachas tomer has got a sop after it. Vehi and she, Devora, was sitting tachas tomer under a palm tree. So it wasn't necessarily under her own palm tree. What's pshat of this sitting under a palm tree? So Rashi says, how did she make a parnosa? You don't make a parnosa from being a novi, right? Nobody goes around selling prophecies for money. You know, you give me, pay me enough money, I'll tell you what's going to happen to you tomorrow. This is not how Nevuah worked. But every Novi had to be independently rich. Because a Novi often has to say things to people they might not want to hear. And a lot of people are rather afraid to tell people what they don't want to hear. Especially if you know that they're going to fire you from your job. You know, use your panosa. So consequently, every single Novi had to be wealthy. You learn later on about Yirmiyahu HaNavi, how many times the man was thrown into prison. How many times he was beaten up. Yirmiyahu HaNavi had a terrible time. And he did exactly what he had to do. We have Zechariah and Yehoyada in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, who was actually killed. Literally, he gave Nevuah, they didn't like him, they actually killed him. So in other words, there was no force field protecting the Novi that, you know, I'm a Novi, I can do what I like and you can't touch me. A Novi had to be independently wealthy so that he wouldn't be afraid of the people. So she was a very wealthy person. She's a very wealthy person. And what did she have? Rashi says she had palm trees, vineyards, olive yards, and white earth, which was used for pottery, to make pots. So she was independently wealthy, and therefore she was free of corruption. There was no way anybody could go to her and say, you aren't saying something nice for a change, and I'll give you some money to pay for it. No way. She was totally free of that. She, with the Abarbanel, says that here you've got Distoma Devora. We have one other person, Devora. Devora mentioned in the Torah was the Menekes Rivka. Rivka, when Rivka came along, she brought her menikta, her nurse with her, and told the nurse died, and this is by Yishlach, it says that the nurse died, and Yaakov Avinu arranged to have her buried. So this was the place where Devora, the nurse of Rivka, was buried, and that's where her namesake, Devora, felt a connection to that particular place. Right? The Radak and the Matudas say that it is our Devora. Toma Devora means the palm of Devora. It was her own, repeated for emphasis. She stayed there in her own area. We learn mitzvah about Shmuel HaNovi. Shmuel HaNovi went all over Eretz Yisrael to give Musa, to give Nevuah. He travelled right around Eretz Yisrael that everybody should see him and hear what he had to say. Devora did not travel. Devora stayed in one place, and everybody came to her. If you wanted to know what Hashem wants from you, anything, have you got any news? Then you went to the Devora where she was. She didn't travel. Maybe it certainly wasn't ladylike to go traveling around. So therefore she stayed in one place. Why under a palm tree? Why under a palm tree, Chazal say, to prevent yichud? A palm tree does not have any low branches. The branches are up above. If you sit under a palm tree, everybody can see you. So no, you never have a chas v'shalom situation, especially if people coming and ask her shailas, where you got a man there, and anybody think, oh, she was alone with a man. Chas v'shalom. It's not a question of doing what's right. You've got to be seen to be doing what's right. So she specially chose a palm tree to sit under, so that nobody could ever accuse her, chas v'shalom, of doing anything that was wrong. She sat in public, everybody could see her in public, and everybody could see who was with her at the time. Right. So the Pasuk says, Vatishlach Vatikra Pasuk Vav, she came, and she then sent for and called Baruch ben Avinom, who lives in Kedesh Naphtali, where he was staying. And I said, Chazal say that this Baruch was her husband. And he came along, And if I had the word borok, borokim is lightning. Borok is lashon of light. Lapidus is fire and light as well. So the two names go together. And then Rabag says that she separated as soon as she became an avia. She couldn't live a normal life then. So she says to him, Leich umoshachto. Go and draw along the army. Go and get a Jewish army together. It's interesting that we'll find that Sisera would not have gone to fight Klal Yisrael if Hashem hadn't made him. Hashem doesn't do unnecessary miracles. So when Sisera, who was to an extent with all his strength, was worried about Klal Yisrael, he was happy to be powerful where he was, but he wasn't keen to go conquering. And Hashem had to put into his mind to want to do it. And that's what he did. Whereas for Klal Yisrael, Hashem did no nisim to make us go and fight. There, Borok had to do it himself. The effort had to come from us. Whereas for the Goyim to fight us, Hashem sends them for a reason. Whereas for us to fight the Goyim needed the effort on our part. Borok had to go and round up the people. We have the word Vayaz'ek later on, and he summoned them. It comes from the idea of Zoka shouting, come on everybody, we've got to fight, we've got to fight. Come on, I need an army. That was the effort he had to put in. And he could only have that if he made the effort himself. There were no nisim to do that. It had to be his effort. So she tells him, Leichu Moshachto, go and get 10,000 men. The Chazal asked the question, why do you need so many people? HaKadosh Baruch was going to do a nace anyway to win, so 10,000 people is a lot of people. Why do you need so many people in the army? You want to have, Hashem wants to win a battle, take two people with you. The answer, pardon? The effort had to be, because Klal Yisrael also didn't deserve it. Klal Yisrael had to be Zocher to get that victory, so therefore they had to put the effort in. And besides, all those people, they came from the two Shvatim, the vast majority came from Zevulun and Naphtali. They were the ones in whose area the problems were arising, because that's where the Canaanim had settled. Remember, they'd been pushed out in the middle of Eretz Yisrael, they were in the north of Eretz Yisrael, and that's where the army had to be collected from. And he had to get the people from those two Shvatim, because we're trying to get the Canaanim out of your land. So you've got to come and fight against it. He had to push them to do so. So then she says, she tells him, "Umashachti elecho, and I will bring along to you, I'll get Sisera," in other words, Nevuah. She says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will cause Sisera to come along, and his chariots, all his things, Hashem will influence him, and that way you will be able to fight against him, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring his army to a place where you can destroy them. Pasuk carries on, Pasuk Ches. So Borok was scared. This is our Jewish general. Our Jewish general was scared. It wasn't a question of, come on, I'll get an army and let's go and destroy them. They had nothing of the sort. He was afraid to go and fight. And the Malbim says that Borok accepted what he was told. His wife, we knew, was a Nevuah. She had a prophecy. He knew it was correct. But he felt that nobody will accept me as the general. They won't listen to me. Even if my wife is the Nevi'im and says that we're going to fight, they won't accept me as the leader. They won't, and equally, they won't be. We will not be roy to have a nace to win against the Canaanim on my own. I can't do it. So he says to her, you have to come. You've got to come with. Because I said before, she didn't leave the place where she was. Her job was to stay under that palm tree all day long, and people came to her with their problems to receive information. So here Borok's saying to her, only if you come with me will I be able to fight against the Canaanim. You don't fight with me, I haven't got a chance. So, came along. And one of the Mephoshim, the Muson Avim, explains here that this is a Milchemes Mitzvah. To drive the Goyim out of Eretz Yisrael is a Milchemes Mitzvah, and women have to do whatever they can to do so. It doesn't mean putting on a uniform, but it means that normally women are not involved in battles in any way. But here, you have the ability to encourage the people by coming with, in which case you're not Pturah. You can't say you're let off. It's nothing to do with me. It's not my job. It is your job, because this is a Melchemes Mitzvah. So, what happens? The next pasuk to here, Borok says, if you come with me, I'll go. If you don't come with me, there's no point on my own. I haven't got a chance on my own. So she says in pasuk Tes, I will go with you. Don't worry, I'll go with you. But, however, you don't think that you're going to win with yourself, that you will get victory, you will get covered out of it, you won't get covered out of it. Stovid explains that in general, to win a battle, a general gets covered in two ways. There are two ways he can get covered. One is the courage. Courage in getting an army together, and a general leads. You know, I can't remember where in history it first started, that a general was the one who stayed at the back of the army. He sent the troops in at the front, and he stood at the back and shouted out the commands. He doesn't want to go in front. The only way that a general's going to get covered is if he goes in the front, ahead of all his men. He's taking all the chances himself. I also could get killed, he's saying, but I'm going ahead, come on, follow me. That's one way, and if he wins the battle that way. And the second one is if the general goes and manages to kill the enemy leader himself. The person who gets to kill the enemy general, the enemy king, will be the person who gets the most covered. And here, one, Borak was afraid to go into battle on his ahead on his own. And secondly, he knew that Sisera would be killed by a woman. So he's not going to be able to kill the general, their general. It'll be somebody else who does. So a woman is going to do so. So therefore, what's going to happen to me? I don't know what's going to happen to me, he's saying. I don't want to go. So she's saying to him, you've got to lead anyway. You won't get the covered. You won't get any covered out of the battle. You'll get through the battle, but you won't get covered in it. But Yael, who was the person who actually killed Sisera, she had no nevuah telling her, you're going to kill him. Borak at least had Devorah telling him that you'll be the leader and you'll take the Jewish people to victory. You'll win the battle. She had that, but Yael didn't know anything of the sort. And she was the one who killed Sisera in the end, as we'll see. So, what happened next? What happens next is that Borak gets together Zebulun and Naphtali. Those are the two main Shvatim who were involved in the battle. Those two from the north, Zebulun and Naphtali men, 10,000 men, and Deborah goes up with them. So now we have somebody called Chever HaKeni. Chever HaKeni, the Kenim Kayin was another name for the family of Yisro. We've got seven names for Yisro. Keni is one of them. So Yisro had converted, as we know. There were two places in the Torah we find Yisro. I mean, you find Yisro first in his own Sidra when he comes along the first time. And we find later on, he mentioned in Bahalosecha as well, that Yisro was there. What happened to Yisro? He became a Ger Tzedek with his family. What did a Ger Tzedek do in Eretz Yisrael? Eretz Yisrael was not given out to the Gerim. Only we, and I told you, for 400 years, you might be a member of Shevet Zvulun, Shevet Naphtali, and you haven't got your own field because the Kananim are living there. But the Gerim were given the right to live there. They were given an area to live in. They're welcome to stay. We've got great respect for you. But you will never be anything other than a family of Gerim. So in the same way as Kohanim and Leviim were known for the fact that what they were. But they weren't given land. There wasn't a land of Kohanim, land of Leviim. There were cities of Leviim. Everybody else at least had their own land. The Gerim never had land. That's why the Gemara tells us that you shouldn't say anything disparagingly to a Ger, even for 10 generations. Now I tell you nowadays, is there anybody here who knows that my father's 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 father, go back 10 generations, was a Ger Tzedek in the 17th century? Is anybody here who knows that? Nobody. It could be true. Nobody knows it. Those people who are Leviim and Kohanim, they know that their great-great-great-grandfather wasn't a Ger Tzedek. But nowadays you don't know. A Ger Tzedek becomes a gay. He lives among Klal Yisrael. He's married. He has children. They assimilate among us without a problem. But in those days, a Ger Tzedek and his son, everybody knew they were Gerim. They were called a family of Gerim. Because there's no way that somebody who was a Ger Tzedek or his great-great-great-great-grandson could ever become Shevet Yehuda, Shevet Naphtali, Shevet Shimon. He couldn't. Because that goes totally by the father's line. So that's it. Well, if you're a Ger Tzedek, every single one of your descendants, the whole of the time you were in Eretz Yisrael, were known as Gerim. That's how they stayed. So therefore, to make any disparaging comment about a Goy, to the descendant of a Ger Tzedek, a person who's been Jewish for as many generations as he can remember back, his family's totally Jewish, but he would know he's not the same as everybody else. He's a family of Gerim. They would know that in the same way as everybody knew what Shevet they came from. These people don't come from a Shevet, they're Gerim. So to make any nasty comment, any disparaging comment about a Goy could have a bad effect. So that's how careful you have to be. So here we have Yisro was the first Ger Tzedek and his family who came along. And they had a whole system of people called the Canaim, a whole big tribe of Canaim, all from Yisro. They lived wherever they lived, and they lived in the south of Eretz Yisrael, around the Negev area. That was the land that was given to them. Now, at the time, this man called Chevra Keni.
The land was given to them?
It was given to them to stay in, to live in. It obviously belonged to somebody else. It was given, the Shoftim at the time gave it to them to stay in. Yeshua apportioned an area for them. Maybe it wasn't one that was being used by anybody else, I don't know. But anyway, they were allowed to live there. So, what happened was that they'd all lived there. They lived a nomadic life. They lived in tents, we're told. They didn't build houses. But they were like Bedouins. They were. And in fact, you find later on, there's an area, a section in the Torah, section in Yirmiyahu HaNavi, Perek Lamed Hei, which also talks about the descendants of Yonadav ben Rechav, who was himself a descendant of Yisro, and he had a lot of people around from he had a lot of Talmidim, and he taught them all to live a nomadic life. Don't be distracted by the town life. You know, we talk about town life nowadays and the problems of town life nowadays. He talks about town life 3,000 years ago. It was just as bad on the level they were on. So don't live in towns. There's so many Averis you can do in towns. Live out in the desert and you're free of the Averis. Anyway, so Chevra Keni, he knew that somehow he would be involved in the destruction of Sisera, he or his wife. And so therefore he left the south and he moved up to the north. And in the north of Eretz Yisrael, he settled down in the area where Sisera was located. And he settled there with his wife. And how did he do that? Because he manufactured a machlokas with his own tribe of the Canaan. And he told, you know, somehow he managed to find some point in which they disagreed. And he walked off, he stormed off. He made a treaty with the Canaanim. And that's how they trusted him. So he said, I'm fed up with my own people, I'll be on your side. So he managed to persuade the Canaanim that my wife and I, we're on your side. We're not with the Jews anymore, we're with you people. And that's where he got trusted. So anyway, so the battle took place. Sisera took all his army, his 900 chariots. He didn't need as many as 900, but he took them all to go and fight. And they went down to the Nachal Kishon, is the valley, the brook of Kishon. Right. So what happens then? So the Masudah says that Sisera understood that Borok came to fight him, and Borok was going up the mountain. So Sisera came down. Again, the sensible thing would be, many castles were built on the top of a hill. That way you sit on the top and you watch the soldiers coming up toward you. Well, it's much easier shooting downwards than it is shooting upwards. So whatever you're doing, throwing down arrows or throwing down stones, it's much easier from the top. HaKadosh Baruch Hu put the idea into Sisera's mind that it would be a good idea to come down instead of staying where he was. So he came down there. Borok didn't have any chariots. All Borok had was foot soldiers. All they were on feet, not even horses. He just had 10,000 men marching. That was all. It would be easy to as a battle going on. Can you imagine? One side's got artillery and the other side has only got men. Literally, that's all they have. Nevertheless, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided that we were going to win. And Devorah told Borok, get up. You go as far as you can up towards them. They'll come down towards you. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to make you win today. Don't worry. So then HaKadosh Baruch Hu confused Sisera that he wasn't able to think straight. So one of the Mephoshim says that thunder came along. There was a tremendous thunder and it wasn't raining. Thunder when it's raining is bad enough. Thunder when it's not raining, they couldn't work out where the noise was coming from. So the Canaanite army started fighting themselves. Started stabbing each other. And that's how the defeat started. And once that had started, the Jewish army, Borok's army, came in and finished it off. Right? So then Sisera realized he wanted to stay with his own men, but it's not going to be very good, because if he stays with his men, you can see a group of Canaanite men and they'll be easier to attack. So he thought, I'll leave my own men to whatever happens to them and I'll get away on my own. So he managed to get away, and he got to this place where Chever HaKeni and his wife were living. Chever HaKeni wasn't there. Yoel was in the tent. As we said, they'd made peace with the Canaanim, so they were regarded as friends. So Yoel went out to meet Sisera, and as she went to meet Sisera, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave a nes that Sisera came in. Sisera was not particularly keen on being alone with a woman, because it wouldn't look good for him. I don't know how moral he personally was, but it wouldn't look good for him. Nevertheless, he got the impression that it would be okay. Just for this time, it would be okay, and she said, come in. The question is, what happened then? So he was tired out. The Pasuk says she gave him milk. So that the milk was given to him once. No, the cholov made him drowsy, and then he fell asleep. There's a machlokas between the Meforshim as to whether there was any zanus that took place or not. One pshat says there wasn't, and the other one says there was. I cannot take sides. I'm telling you what they say. It says on the word, it says in Pasuk Yud Ches, Vatechaseu basamicha. She covered him with samicha. Very strange word, this word, samicha. It's not samicha with a samach and a ches. It's with a sin and a chof. It means a blanket. Either a garment or a blanket. So pshat in the Pasuk is that he lay down. He was very tired. She'd given him milk to drink. She didn't have any wine. And literally he fell asleep, and he fell with covered over with a blanket. That's the poshut pshat. Based on psukim in the next perek, talks about there, and the words they used, the mefarshim say that she did zanus with him 7 times. Literally to wear him out completely. And the chazal say, totally l'shem mitzvah. Completely l'shem mitzvah. There's an avera l'shem mitzvah. The question is asked, what did that mean? What did that do to her marriage? And they say it ruined her marriage. L'shem shemayim, the very fact that she chose to do zanus with him was such, she was a Jewish woman, a married woman, it means she wouldn't be allowed to sit with her husband ever again. But nevertheless, she adopted that for herself because she knew this was an enemy and he had to be destroyed. And the only way she knew she could do it was by making him fall asleep. So she completely drained him, literally wore him out. He was lying there asleep. She did not take a sword to kill him because she was afraid that if she had a sword and he woke up for a second and he saw that she is holding a sword, then he'd literally jump up. He was a trained soldier. He'd jump up and kill her. So for that reason, that couldn't happen. So therefore, she took the tent pin and a hammer, which was a perfectly normal thing to do because a tent sort of flaps out of control. So you've got to go and knock it back into the ground again. It would look perfectly normal. And the Pasuk says, later on, you've got the Pasuk in Yechof Aleph there. So, and he told her before he fell asleep, he said, go and stand at the door in case anybody comes. Anybody says, anyone here? Is there a man to tell? Nobody's here. That's what he told her to do. So when he was asleep, she took the tent pin, literally by his head. He's lying on his head's on the side, and therefore took it there, and then literally straight through, one blow, it went right through his head, out the other side, into the earth, and we're told he died in a split second. There was no struggling. He died straight away. And it's interesting, the Mefarshim say that this was as a result. This was not as a result, but we're told that because he had descendants later on who became Yidden, he was given an easy death because of the fact that in the Zechus, they would have descendants who'd be Yidden, who would learn Torah and teach Torah. And for that, he was given an easy death. Otherwise, he could have died in a far more nasty fashion. He wasn't a nice man throughout his life. Nothing had changed. But because of the zechus for the Torah, therefore he was given an easy death, and literally he died. So Baruch came after him, says the Pasuk, and when Sisera was dead, Yoel went out to Baruch and said, come in, I'll show you, this is the man you're looking for. And saw that he was lying there dead, with the tent literally pinning his head to the ground. And that was it. So the Pasuk tells us that there was nothing more. They literally, they'd finished off Sisera's army. Yavin was the king. Yavin was higher north. And they went. It took 20 years, I think, altogether. But then finally, they had destroyed the Canaanim from that part of Eretz Yisrael. And the Canaanim never had a chance again. For a long period of time, the Canaanim were left us alone. They had no more power. Once Sisera had been destroyed, it took a bit more longer to get to the king. And Yavin Melech Canaan was destroyed. And it was Shalom for Klal Yisrael. The Pasuk says at the end of Vatishkot Oretz Arboim Shana. Altogether, Klal Yisrael had peace for 40 years. And when they had the next battle, it wasn't against the Canaanim anymore. It was against Midian. That was the next thing with Gideon. So the point being, the next parak goes on to talk about the shir that Devorah made against praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu for all the nisim that he'd done for Klal Yisrael. That is half of the Torah. Emir Tashem, next year, let's do the other half. Yehuda, Shimon,
Binyamin, you come as well.
Binyamin, yeah. Close by, Ephraim and Manasseh.
Not Don?
No, Don's in the north.